Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Managing Editor James Kleiman to talk about loan repurchases and why we're seeing the rate of buybacks slowing down. As always, thank you to our podcast sponsor, Vesta, for making this episode possible. James, welcome back to the podcast.
I'm back. You just can't get enough of me. This is the third time this week, right?
I can't. No, it's true. And we are discussing something so germane to our industry. People really care about this. Been a very hot topic. And that is loan buybacks, which, you know, at our last conference, which was in October, we got so much feedback on that. Our session on that was super well attended. It was the talk of the conference. So your team just, I think it was Bill Conroy, just wrote a great story on this, kind of following up. So tell us, where are we with loan buybacks?
We're in a much better place than we were in October when we had all those folks attending and a lot of fear, a lot of panic about, you know. Also, I think it's important to remember that in October, November, around that period, mortgage rates were at like 8%. And these lenders had been losing hundreds or thousands of dollars on every loan that they had originated. And then so at the same time, to also be taking, you know, 80 cents on the dollar by having to repurchase these loans that they thought were good and sold to Fannie or Freddie, and then have to sell it on the scratch in Denmark, it was a really, really, really nasty kick in the gut. So things are much better. Just a little bit of context. So we got this report from Sterling Point Advisors and Augment Analytics. Brett Ludden, for those who don't follow him on LinkedIn, he's a great guy. So definitely recommend you follow Brett. And he has this report that just came out, and he's showing the loan level data from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and it's capturing the repurchases. And in the second quarter of 2022, this is the peak. It was $630 million for Freddie Mac, $593 million for Fannie Mae. And if you look down at where we are in the most recent quarter for which we have data available, that's Q3 2023, Freddie's repurchase volume was $384 million and Fannie's was $382 million. So that's a huge, huge decline. And it does, I think, suggest that we're at minimum in a downward trend in total loans repurchased on a dollar basis. And I think that's probably going to continue for both. And it's also interesting to note that, you know, the data does show that Freddie's repurchase rates are going down at a much faster pace than Fannie's. And so we're going to really see once we get the fourth quarter results if that trend is sticky, but it is pretty interesting stuff.
Well, and we know that Freddie like had an outreach effort to lenders about this issue, right? Trying to help them help themselves.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. To be fair, both GSEs in more recent months have been, I think, a little more vocal about what they're doing. And I imagine there has been probably some pressure from the regulator, the FHFA. Hey, you know, the mortgage market's already a little spooked, and you got a lot of very sensitive folks right now, given the environment, given the market, and we want to handle this responsibly, but we also want to make sure that we don't automatically just say, hey, lender A, you owe me back this loan. There are other options available, and we don't have to just immediately jump to the most extreme and the most difficult for the counterparty, right, lender A, to actually handle. And the other big thing is, you know, when we look historically, this is not the first period in time in which we've had a large boom in repurchases, right? So everybody knows just before the financial crisis, things were a little bit shaky. And one major difference today is just how much more quickly the GSEs are able to buy these loans than they used to be. So if we jump in our little time machine and we look back at the average number of months from origination to repurchase between 2005 and 2008, So basically just before the global financial crisis, we're looking at about 46 months for Freddie Mac and about 52 months for Fannie Mae. So we're talking years, right? Like literal years. And when you look at the same data set between 2018 and the first quarter of 2023, now we're looking at 11 months for Freddie, 13 months for Fannie. And so it's just a totally different, it's, you know, certainly process-based, it's very different. They're a lot more effective. And it's also true that since they've started this big initiative to start buying back loans that the investors were scared about, or, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't meet the quality control that the GSEs has put forth, they're better at it. They're literally better at identifying the loans, making the lender buy them back quickly, and going through all these steps. And I think it's also true that a lot of these lenders are also getting better at doing some of the legwork ahead of time, right? And so instead of getting that call from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac that says, hey, lender A, you know, we've got this problem in 5% of your loans, or whatever that number might be, instead you do a full review beforehand, right? And you get out ahead of it. So everyone is making a change. Everyone is reacting, I think, as best they probably can, given the circumstances. And that's about as much as we could hope for right now.
At the time, there was a lot of talk about, you know, why are they being so aggressive? And in fact, the Urban Institute around this time put out a report and said that, you know, they were being more aggressive earlier. So to your point, they're able to. I'm sure it's technology related where they can see these things, they can run them through. I mean, think about if they're using, you know, an AI thing to point out these things, how much faster that is. But also there was feeling in the industry, which we talked to people at Fannie and Freddie and the FHFA director, and they all said there was not some conspiracy here to kick the industry when they were down. That's how people felt.
Yeah. And whether it was by design or just coincidence or just, you know, people who are already sensitive to it, recognizing, hey, I'm getting knocked on this. My neighbor's getting knocked on this. Everybody I know is getting knocked on this. Like, surely they're targeting us because we're all the same, you know, we're IMBs or whatever. Again, no evidence exists that I'm aware of that states that Fannie and Freddie or the FHFA have specifically targeted them, but does it matter, you know, if that's the feeling, right? If you're still getting asked to basically buy back these loans, spend millions of dollars buying back these loans when you're, again, already losing money on your originations, you're already probably, if you're in that kind of position, there's a better than not chance you're already selling your servicing rights to free up liquidity. Like, it's a really tough time to do that. And yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you could say, hey, it's a good thing that Fannie and Freddie identify much earlier in the process there are problems with these loans. Maybe this person doesn't have the income that they said that they did, or maybe, you know, there was some other error that should have been caught much earlier on. But on the other hand, you look at the actual delinquency rate, you look at the actual problems, and Fannie and Freddie have like, what, 1%, 2% at most of defaults or people who aren't making payments. Like, these just are not problematic loans. But again, like, I'm not the one buying them. I'm not an investor of Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And I don't know how you can tell them, look, yes, maybe I didn't get the income correct on this loan, but you should cut me a break because they're still making the payment. Like, that's not how the rules work.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
So when we see this decrease, at least in this one quarter, you know, over the last couple quarters in loan repurchases, do we think that lenders have gotten better at just doing QC before they send them?
That's part of it. Yeah, lenders definitely have gotten much better at that. I speak to lenders pretty regularly who are very cognizant of the risk of underwriting a loan and having to potentially buy it back if they haven't made sure that they have appropriately trained staff or they haven't scrutinized certain elements on maybe a questionable loan. You know, maybe one of the underwriters was on the fence and they figured out a way to put them into a different loan or a different product or, you know, whatever. Certainly, they're more likely today, I think, to put in an additional review before having Fannie or Freddie buy that loan. And also, the biggest factor here, apart from just being more careful because there is a threat that you'll have to buy it back, is there's just a different market dynamic, right? So you don't have your, it's just like there are enough underwriters now, there are enough processors. You can take a little bit more time because you're not running around with your hair on fire. You're not trying to introduce 50 new workers a day to handle the volume of loans that's coming in 2021, 2022, right? It's just a very early 2022, I should say, early to mid 2022. It's just a very different market. And so at this point, your best underwriters are probably pretty seasoned and know how to make sure that the income is what it says it is on the paper. And you don't have somebody who was a processor 2 weeks ago who got thrown in the role because you had to get somebody and they have their certificate or they have, you know, the training technically to do it, but maybe they're not able to do as much of the job as you wanted.
Well, and we know that, I mean, that's exactly what was happening in 2021 and into the first part of 2022. And we knew, I mean, people talked about it at the time. It's like, we were just getting these loans done and with crossed fingers in some ways going, you know, we'll deal with the ramifications later if there's some issues. Well, you know, to your point, those ramifications came quicker than anyone expected because normally you would have years before any of that stuff would come back at you.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, Bill spoke to the folks at ACES Quality Management. This is a fintech and they provide basically QC software for the financial services industry. And they issue this quarterly report about mortgage QC. And they've been looking at the defect rate for mortgages, primarily Fannie, Freddie, and FHA loans. And the critical defect rate declined from 2.47% in the third quarter of 2022 down to 1.67% in the third quarter of 2023. Now, dropping from 2.5 to 1.6 something percent doesn't seem like a huge deal. But again, contextually speaking, if we're thinking about the volume of loans that are now, you know, under much more scrutiny that have no defects whatsoever down in the 1% range, you know, that requires a lot of coordinated effort. And I think it's a good sign that we're probably well beyond the worst of the buybacks.
I think so too. ACES is one of the very first companies we recognized in our Tech 100, the very first year that we did it. We had to go out and look for companies. We were starting this award. And anyway, they were one of the first ones. I think they've won it every year since. And at that time too, especially, you know, this was 2014, I believe, 10 years ago now, lots of QC needing to be done. We were still in those working through the bad years at that point. So really interesting to see them still in the space, still doing it. So let's talk a little bit about the non-QM space. So we've been talking about the buybacks for Fannie and Freddie. We know that now there's more non-QM loans than ever. Well, since the great financial crisis, right? We're seeing more of those borrowers getting served with different loan products. So how does this play out there?
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about QC, non-QM is really where I think you find a lot more embrace because there's just more risk on the line, right? There's more risk and reward in many respects because the GSEs are not buying those loans. They're just, it's a different risk profile. And so they do a lot more pre-funding eligibility reviews. They're making sure that they have all of the liquidity necessary in the secondary market if the investors are going to be buying all of these loans, right? In a lot of cases, these are rental properties or investment properties or, you know, the like. In some cases, they're primary for gig workers or, you know, foreign nationals or real estate investors, right? So it's just a very different kind of market. And so they have to make sure that if the investors are giving them better pricing on these loans, that they are going to do their due diligence and run it through a quality control review. And so, you know, the investor is going to purchase the loans and they're going to purchase the rights to the due diligence as well. That's called a reliance letter. And that in effect permits the investor to rely on the work done as the lender, as if the investor were doing it, you know, like a ratings agency requirement, so to speak, right? So it does come out of the pocket of the non-QM lender, but supposedly the theory goes that there's a better recapture because the execution is better when it is sold to the investor. There's better pricing and there's a, you know, there's a greater likelihood that the loan is going to end up getting sold to a qualified investor who's going to pay a good amount of money. And so it's definitely where you're going to find a lot more of the pre-funded quality reviews. And a lot of these guys in the non-QM space are starting to embrace more technology and really taking kind of a different approach to ensuring that there's really strong QC, because nobody wants to be the investor who just bought, you know, a tranche of 1,000 Airbnb loans and, oh, you know, nobody's had a booking since, you know, Christmas of 2021, right? So yeah, definitely there's a lot of risk there. And just knowing that the government's not going to buy the loans, they're not going to bail you out. You gotta do the work ahead of time to ensure that the investors feel comfortable. So it's a really, I think we're going to see even more progress when it comes to quality control, making sure that these loans look good from, you know, from the point of origination. It's probably going to come just as much in the non-QM space as anywhere else.
I agree with you. And I mean, for years, if you're in the non-QM space, you have even more incentive to make sure that everything is good. I mean, it's your money on the line, it's your investors on the line. I mean, that it's, I feel like it's such a different market than it used to be, right? Obviously, for so many good reasons. So, you know, one of the things about that I really enjoyed about this story is it talked about like future technology. So because of this risk, because everyone's trying to address it, we really saw sort of this emergence, not only the OGs like Aces and Incenter, but other tech companies coming forward for quality management, QC processes and things like that. And Bill talked to some of them for like what we could look to towards the future. What did he find there?
You found there's a lot of interest and embrace in, I'm going to shock you here. Get ready. Are you ready? A lot of shock. Prepare. AI. A lot of people really interested in AI, as it turns out. And they're really exploring what can we do? What sort of tools can we provide? And also make sure that it is compliant, that we are not running huge regulatory risks by creating some sort of an algorithm that is going to, you know, somehow result in discriminatory practices or anything like that, right? So, you know, again, I want to caution, like, people are being pretty safe about the utilization. This is not something that they're using at such a high level that it's just like generally used, but, you know, certainly it's implemented quite a bit in training. And so, you know, you can train the AI system, you can ask it a question, you can give it various guidelines in response. And so while I think there's a good distance to go before you can upload all of these mortgage docs and really understand, you know, everything about the loan and the underwriting and what kind of guidelines you need to make sure that you are checking the box in, it's certainly enabling a lot of the players, and again, mostly in sort of the non-QM space, but also on the investor side, it's allowing them to do a lot of the work just much more quickly than they used to. There's a lot of manual process that goes into underwriting and QC, and if you can train your algorithm correctly and you're using it for very specific purposes, there's not a lot of risk, right? I mean, it's basically like a calculator, kind of like a souped up calculator. And I think that's only going to get better. But we're definitely years away from being in a place where we're removing all the human touch points and all the judgment and the quality control processes that are functionally human at this point, where you or I, you know, reviewing the loan would say, okay, yeah, this one works. This one meets our investor, you know, requirements. The computer said this one does, but I took a look at it and the computer missed this because the computer doesn't fully know. And, you know, although I think in general, we're even within the last year that I've been fooling around with AI here and there. It's gotten so much better, but there are still weird problems, right? Like I use this software called Midjourney, and I use it to generate images because we don't have like an in-house graphic designer that I can call on when I need a, you know, a really interesting bit of art for a story. And often what I want to do is have the subjects in this AI art have a sign, and it will say something like real estate plus mortgage. And you throw it through the engine, and then it comes back and it will like misspell real estate, or mortgage will have two M's, or it'll have like an extra hump on the M, or it's like all these weird little issues, or like the hands will look deformed, right? And all kinds of just funny stuff. Like, yeah, that still happens all the time. And so you can't just say, I'm going to put it through the AI engine and be confident that that will always safeguard you. So we're years away, I think.
Yeah, I do think it's a good case study. Like you said, it's a good use for AI when you think about, like, you know, training it, putting it through, you have all this data, you can give it all the rules, you know, it can do something fast. But I've been talking to lots of tech executives. I think I've done 33 or 34 interviews of tech executives once a week now for a couple months. And well, for like 6-7 months to a person. I think there's only one who's really using AI at the level that maybe we think people are. A lot of people are looking at it. A lot of people are doing this kind of thing where they're training it. A lot of people are, but I mean, it's just not good enough yet when you're in this sort of regulatory environment. I talked to Ike Suri yesterday. He's head of Funding Shield, and he echoed what actually when I talked to Certified earlier this year, it's like 98% is not good enough. Like we can't be like, oh, okay, well, we got pretty close. When it comes to compliance, when it comes to fraud risk, when it comes to some, or like this, you know, QC, like you can't be 98%. You have to be as closer than that.
So we were at 1.67% in the third quarter, and you doubled that to, you know, 3.5 or whatever. That would be like the worst case scenario. I mean, that's how many loans we're talking about here in the aggregate. So yeah, it's just not, we're still a great distance away. I only use AI to like organize my email and to do silly little things like try to figure out like a fun new game that I can play with my 2-year-old son to keep him from jumping off the walls, you know, like, but I wouldn't use it for anything in sensitive work, right? That would just, it would be, I think, a lack of judgment. So.
Well, great to see this story, and great to see that this huge pain point for our industry is being resolved one way or the other, whether that's because, you know, the GSEs have reached out and explained things better, whether that's because the lenders are taking more time and doing more QC on the front end, I don't know. But great story, and thanks for giving us everything about it, giving us your insight.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Sarah. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show or leave a comment. We'll see you back here on Monday for more news and insight.